Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 72.
The House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The Sergeant-at-Arms will close the doors. Members and visitors are asked to please silence all electronic devices. This morning's prayer will be offered by Representative Quick. We'd ask our members and our guests in the gallery to please stand for the prayer and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance thereafter. Representative Quick.
Good afternoon, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, and good afternoon to all who are listening in and gathered. Can we please pause for a moment of silence before I pray a prayer of the Christian faith? Lord God, please help us to pray. For Lord, in this prayer moment, we know what we want, but you know what we need. Translate our desires into your will. Decrease us that you may increase. You said in your word that a broken and contrite spirit you will not despise. So break us from all arrogance and selfishness, and keep us reminded that you came and set the example as to how we ought to serve one another and not seek to be served. Mold us by your use of both sunny days and trials. Grieve us when we are wrong and deal with us, please, as our Father and not from your wrath. And mostly, God, we ask this morning, please never remove your guiding hand from us, for without you there is no telling what we would do or where we would find ourselves. Have thine own way. Have thine own way. You are the potter, and we are merely clay. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for June 2nd has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Hall moves the journal for June, moves that the journal for June 2nd be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is so approved. Petitions, memorials, or papers addressed to the House. The clerk will read.
West Virginia House of Delegates, the enclosed is sent to you pursuant to the directive in the resolution. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact my office. Sincerely, Stephen J. Harrison, Clerk of the House. Calling for a construction of license of highway vehicle semi-contiguous trial for parallel Appalachian hiking trail on the western side.
Be prepared for that.
Noted. Correspondence is placed on file in the House Principal Clerk's office. Ratification of bills and resolutions. The clerk will read.
The enrolling clerk reports the following bills, duly ratified for presentation to the governor. Senate Bill 135, an act improving the efficiency of organ, eye, and tissue donation at the Department of Motor Vehicle by requiring donors to originally become donors of another jurisdiction and consent to imprinting of the anatomical gift statement for symbol in the donor's North Carolina driver's license or identification card, and by clarifying the anatomical gift by authorizing that the statement of symbol be imprinted on the donor's driver's license identification card will be considered revoked. Senate Bill 248, an act to include additional information on health benefit plan identification cards. Senate Bill 586, an act to direct the Legislative Research Commission to study lipidemia. And the following resolution, duly ratified, properly enrolled, and prepared for presentation to the Office of the Secretary of State. Senate Joint Resolution 718, a joint resolution confirming the appointment of Adrian A. Phillips to the North Carolina Industrial Commission.
Chapter bills will be noted. messages from the Senate. The clerk will read.
House Bill 128, Senate Committee Substitute, Third Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to re-employ North Carolinians' workforce and provide bonuses for accepting re-employment and requiring individuals to respond to employer requests to make administrative changes to the unemployment insurance laws for concurrence in the State Senate Committee Substitute.
Counter pursuant to Rule 36B. Court may continue.
Senate Bill 257, Committee Substitute, Third Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to remote prices, transparency, and patience, and to establish standards, criteria for regulating licensures for pharmacy benefits managers providing services for health benefit plans in North Carolina.
Rules counter in operations of the House. Representatives Bradford, Setzer, Soka, Kidwell, and Ray recognize to send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representatives Bradford, Setzer, Soka, Kidwell, and Ray, Finance Committee report. House Bill 181, Wildlife Resources Commission amendments. Favorable committee substitute number 3. Unfavorable committee substitute number 2. And we refer to rules, calendar, and operations of the House.
Committee substitute number 2 is placed on the unfavorable counter. Committee substitute number 1 is referred to the committee on rules, calendar, and operations of the House. John was recognized to read an additional committee report from the Finance Committee.
Representatives Bradford, Setzer, Zoka, Kidwell, and Ray, Finance Committee report, House Bill 71, Living Donor Protection Act, favorable committee substitute number 2, unfavorable committee substitute number 1, and we refer to insurance.
Committee substitute number 1 is placed on the unfavorable calendar. Committee substitute number 2 is referred to the committee on insurance. Chair directs that Senate Bill 448 be removed from today's calendar, be placed in calendar 36B. House Bill 654, the clerk will read.
Representatives Hollister, Reeves, Lambert, and Bradford, House Bill 654, a bill to be entitled Statewide Contracts, Nonprofits for the Blind, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
The House will come to order. Taking up business at this point, the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Hardister, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, what this bill does is it would prioritize state contracts for purchases, for material, for state agencies. The nonprofits would have to employ individuals who are disabled. At least 70% of their employees would have to be disabled. Primarily, it would be the visually impaired, like the industries of the blind and industries, of the blind and so forth. We have facilities across the state that would qualify for this. We actually had a field trip yesterday, and the speaker was there, other members of the chamber in there, and it was illuminating to see, the type of manufacturing that these facilities are capable of making. And, it's really phenomenal to see what they're doing. Like, for example, in Greensboro, Industries of Blind, they make products for the military. I mean, we're talking like shirts for the military. During COVID, they would make the masks that they would wear in the military that were, military grade. They would also make like backpacks, and I think even parachutes and things like that. And you couldn't take pictures because some of it was, kind of classified type of stuff. But it's really amazing what they do. And so the primary purpose of the bill is to address a pressing issue in North Carolina. It's a jobs bill. The fact is, people who are disabled, they just have a more difficult time finding a job and remaining employed. There's some stats on that. It's actually quite staggering if you look at it. But we actually had testimonials from some of the individuals who are you know, disabled, and it's just life-altering for them to have a job, you know, to get them off disability. So, you know, these facilities are set up specifically so people, and some of these people are completely blind, and they're actually producing products. So it's really, it's quite incredible. But again, this would be like IFB Solutions, which is in Forsyth County, Industries of Blind, which is in Guilford County. LCI is where we went yesterday in Durham, just you know, a few minutes from here. So essentially, let's say a state agency wants to, or they decide they need to purchase like number two pencils or something, and then it becomes known through department administration that there's qualified nonprofits that can meet that demand. It would have to be commensurate quality and pricing compared to the private sector. But if, you know, if those qualifications are met, then at that time, preferential treatment would be given to the qualified nonprofit. But again, you know, this is not really competitive bidding. It's a curation process that would be administered by Department of Administration, and it would have to be to protect the taxpayer. It would have to be commensurate quality and pricing. And also, I've been made aware that this does not impact the correctional facilities. That this doesn't, they're separate, so that this would not impact them. That you know, basically explains the bill. With that said, I do have an inquiry of the chair.
Chairman is recognized for his inquiry.
Mr. Speaker, I had an amendment drafted for this yesterday that I believe I expected it on the dashboard, and I don't see it there. So I wonder if the clerk is in possession of an amendment.
We don't have a copy of that. If the gentleman would send that forward, I'll come back and let the gentleman be recognized to send that forward.
Thank you, sir.
For purpose, gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and ask to speak on the bill. The
gentleman has the floor.
And I would just also rise in support. This is a pretty amazing institution that we had a chance to visit yesterday and that we've had a chance to work on. I appreciate Representative Hardster and the other sponsors for doing the work that we've done on this. And it's a chance to help a population that desperately wants not handouts, but an opportunity to be able to work, and what, how it empowers them and how it makes them feel about their lives and their ability to be productive citizens is amazing. And one of the things that I've actually just talked in caucus about, and I would repeat here, that shocked me, were seeing the breadth of individuals that were affected, because I think a lot of times when we think of the blind population in particular, but with a lot of disabilities of this sort, we immediately think of people who have either had it since childhood or, you know, had it since birth. And you had people who had worked on Wall Street and all kinds of different walks of life who weren't affected until they were in their 20s. And suddenly going from, you know, prosperous, good careers to trying to figure out what they're going to do to maintain a roof over their heads and desperately not wanting to have to depend on somebody for that, this gives them that opportunity. So we definitely appreciate all of your support for this bill.
The amendment is being loaded to the dashboard. The chair is going to review that momentarily. The gentleman is recognized. Send forth an amendment. Clerk will read.
Representative Hardiston moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 3, by deleting the phrase.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, what this does is it removes political subdivisions of the state from the bill. Essentially, a political subdivision is a municipality or a county. This is not intended to apply to them. It's intended to apply to state agencies. That's what the amendment would do, and appreciate your support.
Members, the amendment is being loaded right now. The chair will hold off until in the vote until we can see it. It does appear the gentleman, the chair has reviewed the amendment. It does appear that it, what it does is it does not make it apply to local governments, but makes it permissive for local governments. Amendment, if members will refresh their browser, the amendment should be before the body. Further discussion or debate on the amendment? Anybody need further time? Seeing none, question for the House, the adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. We're now back on the bill. Further debate, further discussion on House Bill 654. If not, the question for the House is the passage of House Bill 654 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk Webb, in the vote. Representative Cleveland, does the gentleman wish to vote? Representative Lucas on the floor. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 106 having voted in the affirmative and 2 in the negative. House Bill 654 passes its second reading and without objection will be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Question before the House is the passage of House Bill 654 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. 654 having passed third reading will be sent to the Senate. Ordered and engrossed as well. Thank you, Mr. Corp. There's an amendment being drafted for Senate Bill 116, so the chair is going to go ahead and take up Senate Bill 43. The clerk will read.
Senators Britt, Daniel, and Johnson, Senate Bill 43, a bill to be entitled an Act to enact the Religious Assembly Security and Protection Act of 2021 and to authorize concealed carry for certain law enforcement facility employees. Jim Silver, North Carolina, next.
Representative McNeely, does the gentleman wish to debate the bill first, or does the gentleman wish to send forth the amendment first?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to send forth the amendment first, please.
The gentleman's recognized for the amendment to be sent forth. The clerk will read.
Representative McNeely moves to amend the bill on page 2, lines 24 through 25, by rewriting those lines to read.
Representative McNeely is recognized to debate the amendment.
This is very simple. This is just a technical correction to the bill, so if you would please vote yes for this, and then we'll get into the meat of the bill.
Further discussion or debate on the amendment? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. The gentleman is now recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Y'all have seen this bill in different forms, but basically it's the same thing. It's coming back from the Senate. I like to think of this as the Reader's Digest version of it because it's just two parts of the four that was in House Bill 134. Basically, it talks about church, and also it talks about certain satellite offices for sheriff's departments. I know a lot of people are probably not going to vote for this bill because it has the word gun in it. But that's not what this bill's about. And if guns are bad, then I'm pretty sure a fork and a car are just as bad, and I don't know which is going to kill more this coming year. And if I keep eating, I think it'll be the fork. I do want to say this, a few things. One, if you're thinking about voting against the bill, and that's your prerogative, that's fine. But if you go to church, and I hope you do go to church, and you have a security team that protects you while you're at your church, which obviously means you don't have a school there, then I wish you'd just vote and sit still and don't say nothing, because I feel the hypocrisy. And I know that some are going to speak out today against this for a sound bite, because they want to be heard against guns.
Mr. Speaker, point of order.
For purpose, the gentleman from Wake, Representative Martin, has risen to a point of order. The gentleman is recognized to state his point of order.
In violation of our rules and of Mason's, the gentleman is addressing the motivations of folks who may or may not vote for this bill.
The chair is going to be honest. The chair was talking to another member, did not hear what was said, but the chair would make this statement to any member debating, to not question or not try to personalize any of the debate or why one side or one person opposes or supports. So I would just ask any members debating to keep that in mind. Gentleman has the floor to continue debating the bill.
Sorry, Mr. Speaker, if that's the way it was taken. It was not meant that way. But do know this. We sit in here, and we feel very safe and very privileged because we are protected by people outside here who are armed. And that's a blessing. I hope all can have that security and that safety and that blessing. wherever they may be. And not saying this in a bad way or a wrong way, but I look at this bill and I think a lot about the mask that we've all wore, some more than others this past year, and it kept you safe and it made you feel safe. And some are still wearing it, and that's great, and that's fine, and that's their privilege, and that's their right to protect themselves and keep themselves safe. And that's pretty much what this bill's about, too. It's about that feeling of safety, that ability to protect yourself, that ability to worship and know that there's maybe one less thing that could happen to you that day because you're protected in some way or some form. So I just want you to think about that. Your mind may be made up, and I'm sure it is, but I want you to think about these things. Because basically what we're doing, we're taking away a constitutional right from a certain group of people. They're usually religious people in this thing. That's where we're falling. So think about that, and think about how you've enjoyed your freedoms and your rights, and how you would feel if your rights were taken away from you. Evil's all around us every day. It comes in the forms of maybe a virus, or it comes in the form of a deranged individual. The Lord has asked us to stop evil in whatever form it comes. Dylan Ruth, who killed people, 9 of them in Charleston, was apprehended in Shelby, North Carolina. He could have come to a church here and done the same thing. Would they have been able to protect themselves? With the law the way it is now, there's a good chance not. There's over 533 of these churches with schools in the state of North Carolina. I'd like to read something from you if I could. Maybe this is a little stretch because I know we're not to, but this is the Bible verse. This is Luke 22:36. If you'd like to open up and follow along, that'd be great. Then he said unto them, and this is Jesus talking about him getting ready to be crucified and leave them. And he said unto them, but now, he that have a purse, let him take it, and likewise his scrip. And he that have no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. Because he knew the day was coming when the church would be persecuted, when the church would be, violence would be against it. And we see that now, just as they saw that then. I stand for any questions.
For what purpose, the lady from McAwork, Representative Bell, cries?
To speak on the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you. The stated purpose, and I understand it, is that people in churches don't feel safe, that there are some church communities that do not feel safe and they want to be protected. And that is their prerogative. If they feel that their safety and their parishioner's safety is in question, there's a way to do that. And what that is to have people who are trained and they can ask them to come and protect their congregations, and that's through law enforcement. People are trained to deal with situations where there are people who are intent on harming other people. It's a deterrent. When we talk about how do we be safe, one of the deterrents is when you see law enforcement. They can bring their vehicles. You know, you see it. If somebody's going to do harm, if they see law enforcement, they might say, this is not a place where I want to be. We can do that. That is the prerogative of a church if they feel so unsafe and feel that their parishioners have to be protected. I don't know that we have to say, let's have people in the congregation who have concealed weapons in churches where there are school facilities. I don't think that that's a necessary when we do have people that is what their profession is, to keep us safe. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah. For what purpose does the gentleman from Lee, Representative Sauls, rise?
To ask the sponsor a question, please.
Representative McNeely, does the gentleman yield?
I do, sir.
He yields.
Representative McNeely, this is the bill that simply allows churches to have armed security if they're used in a school when there's no children there. That's the bottom line, correct?
Yes, sir, that is. When there's no extracurricular or curriculum activity going on at the school, they will be allowed to have concealed carry.
That's all it is.
That's all it is.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Polk, Representative Johnson, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative McNeely, is the gentleman yield?
Yes, I do.
He yields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative McNeely, you know, some of the churches, they're not quite as large. I don't know specifically what their budgets are. Do you have any cost estimates on what this would cost a church to implement this paid security team if they were, this bill were to not pass?
Okay, go ahead and respond to that. Yes, actually I do. I talked with my sheriff about this because that has been brought up in committee that they could hire security just like Representative Belk just stated. Unfortunately, that's very expensive, he said, and it'd have to be an off-duty police officer of some kind. It cannot be just a security team. That's not allowed in the state because of the bill, the way the general statute is now. And he said it would be somewhere between $250 and $300 per time. So if they meet Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesday, you're obviously looking at close to $750 to $900 a week that it would cost for that security. And, you know, funny, a lot of police and sheriff's departments right now are struggling with their budgets because for some reason or other they didn't get as much funding here lately as they have in the past. I think that was the choice of some elected officials. And so they don't have the manpower, especially if you look at Buncombe. Buncombe is about 40% under their stated need as far as what they have to have, City of Asheville. Right now, they're just one example, but there's many out there. So to be able to have somebody come and do this, it's going to really be almost impossible, Representative Johnson. I'm glad you asked that question. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise?
To debate the bill.
The lady has the floor.
Well, I wonder if the cost of security would outweigh the cost of any liability for someone who's carrying concealed in one of these situations and misfires, hits someone else, hits an innocent person. Is that church going to be able to afford the insurance, the policy, the civil lawsuit? We have police, as Representative Belk said, for a reason, for safety and protection. But what we're debating is not for a soundbite. It's looking at a serious concern of the proliferation of guns in this country. In January alone, over 2 million gun background checks were done in this country. 2 million more guns within 1 month in this country. Month after month after month. And we are debating bill after bill after bill, not for legal ownership of guns, but let's expand. Let's take them anywhere. Let's take them anytime. Because we are going to do all we can to protect ourselves and make sure we are armed to go after the bad guy or protect others. Talk about defund the police. If everyone's armed, we don't need an armed force. We don't need police safety and protection. And once again, I've made this argument before. Active shooter training is not required for anyone who gets a concealed handgun permit. I think we're putting people in a much more dangerous situation, especially in a place of worship. The common sense solution, get a private security guard, get an off-duty police officer. But to continue to expand and expand everyone's right to carry anywhere, anytime, this country is facing some dark days ahead as our gun violence goes up. Where we should be looking is common sense gun safety, not infringing on anyone's Second Amendment rights, but it's getting out of control. I urge you to vote against this bill. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, rise?
Yes, to bill sponsor, a couple of questions, if I may.
Representative McNeil, does the gentleman yield to a series of questions?
I do, sir.
He yields. The gentleman to recognize for a series of questions.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Representative, for allowing the questions. In this bill, I've read it through, and I didn't find it. Is there any place that the that says that people would be required or that the churches would have to sanction the carrying that would put them in a liability situation?
Thank you for the question, Representative Kidwell. No, there is no requirement. This allows for an option. They may, not shall, they may, if they choose.
So the church itself would not say, we want you to carry a gun on Sunday, which would then put the church in a liability position. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
So the next question would be is, would the church have the ability to post a sign that said no firearms are permitted regardless of this law?
Yes, they could put the sign up. They're more than welcome to. That is their right.
Well, thank you for that, Representative. May I speak on the bill, Mr. Speaker?
Chairman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you for that. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about a lot of things here today. One of them is making choices, and I always find that very concerning. We always talk about the choices that we want to make on the left and regarding other issues, but we don't want to give people the choice to defend themselves. You know, it's their choice to do it. It's their choice whether or not they want to carry. It's their choice whether or not they want to defend their family. It's their choice whether or not they want to go to a church that allows people to carry a firearm in that building. So let's allow them the choices that you're very fond of. We talk about the cost. Evidently, it doesn't matter that it costs the churches money to hire these private security firms or the police to come in and defend what could be done at no cost. And in fact, as my friend Jay Adams has pointed out, Representative Adams pointed out many a time, one of the biggest deterrents to stop somebody from going into any structure and executing a crime is somebody in there might be armed. Just the fact that they might be armed stops this. If you look at things like school shootings and church shootings, when they know there's going to be armed people, the bad guys don't go in. It's that simple. They go to the places where they're not likely going to be killed before they execute their crime. The way you do that is by having an armed society. As we've heard in the past, Samuel Colt said, an armed society is a polite society. And that's a fact. You don't generally get real aggressive with somebody if they might be carrying a gun. Kind of makes you shut up and sit down. When someone is armed, we find a group of people there that are very law-abiding citizens. Statistically, it is a fact, supported time and time again by the FBI, that when people have concealed carry permits, they are the most law-abiding group of people on the planet. There's a reason for that. Number one, they had to go through a lot of effort to get that permit. They don't just hand them out like candies on Halloween at the sheriff's department. You have to go down, you have to make application, you have to take a course, you have to disclose everything about yourself, your mental health status, your physical status. Have you ever beat up on somebody in a domestic violence situation? Have you had a DUI? Are you a United States citizen? Have you been a criminal? Then they run background checks to make sure you didn't lie. And if you did, you're going to get arrested for that. Once you get a concealed carry permit, you've invested a significant amount of money, time, and effort to get that permit. People don't want to lose that ability. That's why they are the most law-abiding group of people. Law enforcement is not as law-abiding as concealed carry permit holders. That is a factual statistic. They commit more crimes. I'll give you another one you didn't know. And anybody in law enforcement that ever wants to correct me, I'll be outside later on. I'll take your questions. Law enforcement misses their target 85% of the time with the first three rounds. Wow. You know, concealed carry permit holders are much better shots than that. In general, they are far more accurate, missing with only the first round, generally hitting with the second and third. So in most cases, they're more accurate than law enforcement. These, look them up. Don't take my word for it. You can Google it. It's there. It's real simple. Who's paying that bill? Because, ladies and gentlemen, if we take away people's Second Amendment rights, which I would argue you do already, who's paying the bill? Because here's the habit we're in. Whether it's a Second Amendment right, whether it's the right to fish or hunt, we, government, takes away people's rights and sells them back to them for a fee. Now you want to take away the right and the ability of churches and law-abiding citizens to protect themselves on Sunday, not just in church. Because if I'm carrying a firearm, I have to go from the church to my car, from my car to the church. Who's protecting me during that time? Are we going to have police officers hired to walk me in and out of church on Sunday? Church I attend has four services on Sunday, one on Saturday. That bill's going to get really big, really fast. Are we going to fund that through the General Assembly? We going to have the taxpayers pay that bill? We can do this for free. We can keep the ne'er-do-wells out by saying there might be an armed person in there. And we do it for free because they'll go out and practice on their own. They'll go out and get their own weapon, and they'll be there. If you want to see the video, it's online. The guy that walked in with a shotgun in the church in Texas, we talked about this last time this bill was up here. Three people rose to defend that church. All three were armed. Two of them were killed, unfortunately. The third person took out the perpetrator. He did it with a very nice .357 Magnum, I might add. One shot, properly placed, and it was over. How much more would have happened in that situation had those three people not been there and willing to defend the other parishioners at that church? I'll end with this. Both the United States and North Carolina Constitution guarantees the citizenry the right to keep and bear arms for the purposes of defending themselves and their families and their friends. Don't take that right away. Don't stifle that. Don't do what the Second Amendment tells us and infringe upon the rights of the people to keep and bear arms. I encourage your green vote on the bill.
For what purpose does the lady from Buncombe, Representative Fisher, rise?
Mr. Speaker, to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Ladies recognized, speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, I rise to remind us all that this weekend is the what would have been the birthday of Hadiah Pendleton, the young black teenager who was shot and killed in Chicago just 2 weeks after the inaugural parade for President Obama in 2013. What happened after that was that her friends gathered and wore orange in her honor, and to remind people that more guns is not the way to solve the problem of gun violence. So I encourage you to wear orange this weekend and join the movement to stop the proliferation of guns in our society. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Nash, Representative Gallagher, rise?
To debate the bill, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen of the House. I'm going to vote no on this bill, but not because it has the word gun in it. As I've mentioned on more than one occasion, I'm a concealed carry holder. My wife is a concealed carry holder. My son is a Nash County Deputy Sheriff. So I'm not voting no on this bill because it has gun in it. I'm voting no on this bill because it seeks to address a problem that just, quite frankly, doesn't exist. Now let me be very clear. Every church shooting is one church shooting too many. But let's look at the real data around church shootings. There are 10,000 churches in North Carolina. Typically, those churches will worship at least once per Sunday. And to an earlier statement by another representative, many of those churches worship multiple times in a Sunday. Now consider for a moment the math. 10,000 churches, at least 52 times a year, you're over a half a million a year. If you would extrapolate that over the last 5 years, then ask yourself in North Carolina, how many church shootings were there? You would quickly ascertain that this is a non-issue. If you would take it further throughout the country, 300,000 churches, which you'll find that there's been 19 shootings, which means you're three times more likely to be struck by lightning than to be shot in a church. But yet we're not passing legislation that if it happens to be storming on a Sunday, we should pass some kind of legislation against God. It just simply is a non-issue.
Mr. Speaker.
Data suggests.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Iredell, Representative McNeely, rise?
Could I ask Representative Gilliard a question, please?
Representative Gary, does the gentleman yield to a question?
I do not yield.
He does not yield. The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Lifeway Research, which is owned by the Southern Baptist Convention, arguably the most conservative and the largest conservative church body in America, their research suggests 4 out of 5 churches, 80% of churches already have security. And just as a FYI, that doesn't cost anything. You don't pay people to greet at the door. You don't pay people to be ushers. You don't pay people to sing on the choir. Lots of people who are in churches that are concealed carry holders volunteer their service to secure their church building. So I'm voting no, because this is simply an issue that we ought not be legislating in our state house. And I would encourage all of us to vote no on this bill as well. Thank you very much.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Catawba, Representative Adams, rise. Debate the bill. Gentleman has the floor.
My cord's too short. I just want to say this about concealed carry. It's already been said, but this really is about deterrence. And I want to address a couple of things that have been brought up here. One is about more guns, more violence. Since 1990, we've seen a dramatic decrease in violent crime in this country. What happened in the 1990s that probably contributed to this was the fact that states began to pass concealed carry laws, and they saw a decrease in violent crime. And today, in North Carolina, we have over 900,000 concealed carry license holders in this state, which is a tremendous deterrent to crime, in my opinion. And I think the data would back that up. The other thing that's been brought up here is the fact that there has been a proliferation of gun buyers in this country. I want to point a couple things out to you about that. The AR-15, which is reviled by many on the anti-gun side of the ledger, was introduced to the market in 1957. I saw the first one in 1970, and I looked at and wondered what it might be for. There was really no sales of the AR-15 until the late 1980s, when the first proposals for an assault weapon ban were brought forward. The first real explosion of sales of that weapon and others began with the assault weapon ban in 1994. That increase began what has become one of the most remarkable purchases of one single firearm. Before that, the most bought a rifle long gun in the United States was the lever action Winchester. To date, there have been 7 million of those sold to date, and they were created in the 1880s. The AR-15 is estimated today has sold over 20 million firearms. So I want you to understand this. It's not the marketing of Colt or Armalite or anybody else that has caused that increase in purchases of those weapons. It's been the anti-gun movement, which has been a threat to law-abiding Americans who wish to own firearms. So if you want to slow that down, if you want to see a reduction in the sales of those weapons, that's a clue for you. But getting back to the point here, churches have asked to allow their people that go to those churches to carry a concealed weapon if they're properly licensed to do so. They simply want permission to do that. Why would you not allow them to do that when the data shows that concealed carry, simply the allowance of concealed carry, not the carrying of firearms, not the use of firearms, simply the fact that a law-abiding citizen may be present in that facility that would deter a bad actor from coming in, why would you deny them that? Please vote green on this and understand the part you're playing and what's going on in the firearm world today. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Iredell, Representative McNeely, rise?
To speak on the bill a second time, but I would like to ask a question of Representative Gilliard, if he'd take my question now.
Representative Gilliard, does the gentleman yield to a question?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I yield.
Okay. Representative Gilliard, I understand you're a pastor of a church. Do you have a security team at your church?
Yes, we do.
Are they armed?
Yes, they are.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir, for that. I'll speak to the bill now.
The gentleman has forward debate bill.
Obviously, it's a need. It's a need. Why would you deny somebody a need? If they needed a glass of water, you'd hand it to them so they don't die of thirst. If they needed air, you'd figure out some way to give it to them so they don't suffocate. Obviously, these people feel like they need this, so why are you going to deny them? It's the constitutional right.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Wake, Representative Jones, rise.
Get myself in trouble. I'm going to speak to this bill. And
gentlemen, has forward, debate the bill.
I sat here and thought about this a long time. The bill, first of all, let me get a couple things straight. People in churches have a right to bear concealed weapons right now. Okay? The schools generally have security people. And I'm not sure if they have weapons or not. And someone can tell me they do or don't. I think some do. All right. But this bill speaks specifically to a situation where school, education, property, and church is combined. Okay? So the drafters of this have made an effort to separate out the right to bear arms when that combination is not in play. Now, read from the bill. It says Section 3, GS 14-269.2 is amended to allow the following. The educational property is the location of both a school and a building that is a place of religious worship as defined in GS 14-54.1. So it sets the foundation. Then it goes on to say in Part 4, handgun is only possessed and carried on educational property outside of the school operating hours. So they took care of that. They also say the person or persons in legal possession or control of the premises have not posted a conspicuous notice prohibiting carrying a concealed weapon. So they say if you want to stop anyone, you can put a sign up. So they have exceptions in there, but what it allows is when the church that shares the educational property is in session, if they have chosen, and they make that decision on their own. Each church makes its own decision. Reverend Gale, you just said what his church made decision of. They have a right to protect themselves when they're worshiping. I grieve over the Charleston thing. It makes me very, very sad that that guy went in there pretending to be a worshiper and slaughtered those people like that. It's sickening. And I wished that somebody had been there to protect those dear people from that crazy man. And so, I'm going to tag me and bag me and say I shouldn't have spoken to this, but I thought I had to speak to that. I'm a gun owner. I have a gun at my home. I had a gun when I was a judge. I've never, thank God, had to use it, but it's my home. And if someone's in there worshiping God in a building that happens to be used at other times for education, but it's not being used at that time, they have a right to protect themselves when they're worshiping. That's all this is doing, I believe. And I know we're not supposed to be personal, but I got nervous when I agreed with Kidwell. but I'm just saying, read the bill. Look at it. Think about it. It's not just, now, if you're just against guns, I understand. I respect people just against guns, but I can't be a hypocrite. I'm not just against guns because I have guns. And I don't apologize. I'm a very peace-loving man, believe me. But if someone comes after my family or someone I love, or if I'm in a worship service, and I'm not on the security team. I wouldn't want me on it. But we have a right to protect ourselves when we're trying to worship God. In a building that happens to be a connected to educational building that's not being used for that at that time. That's all this seems to do. And so I just want to say that. And so read the bill, make your own mind. Everyone has a conscience thing. You can make up your own mind. Your own conscience drives you. But I just thought I'd stand up and say that. Thank you very much.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise?
Speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can well imagine that I'm not the only member of this body who's ever received death threats.
You know, I'm so tired of my wife crying her eyes out because I got another death threat on the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning. I also happen to be a pastor of a small church. I don't know that somebody might not try to make good on one of those threats and come into my church and try to take me out, maybe take some others with me. It's important that we be able to defend ourselves. As Representative McNeely pointed out, even Jesus said, you know, things are going to get bad. You need to have a sword. I think he understood. Because y'all know that I'm all about the right to life. This is a right to life issue. The right to life is the most basic of rights that we have as human beings, and it includes the right to defend our lives. That's why we have the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment does not give you the right to keep and bear arms. It acknowledges that God already gave you the right to defend yourself. So it serves that purpose that already existed before we ever had the Constitution. And I believe that anything that interferes with an honest, law-abiding citizen being able to defend themselves violates a God-given right as well as the Second Amendment, which acknowledges that right. I think every law that we have on the books that makes it harder for a law-abiding citizen to obtain and carry a weapon should be repealed because it violates, every one of those laws violates the Second Amendment. Now, I'm fortunate. I serve a little church, and we can't afford, you know, to hire a security team. Okay, maybe you don't always have to pay them. And we don't meet in a school building. So, yeah, we already have the freedom. And if we have the right, there's a difference between rights and freedom. Rights is what God says, you know, you have the right to do. Freedom is what the government will allow you to do, and sometimes the government violates our rights by taking away some freedoms. We have the freedom in our church to be armed if we feel the need to be. And maybe we don't have any present known threat, but there are some out there who would love to shut our churches down and burn them down around us. There is a general threat out there, and you never know when it may come to you, especially somebody like me who has received numerous death threats. You just never know what might happen. And I'm happy that I'm able, you know, to serve in a church where we're free to be armed if we so choose. But I refuse to discriminate against churches that maybe have a school going on their property during the week, but it's not happening on Sunday. I don't want to tell them just because they have a school during the week that they can't be armed on Sunday when the school is not there. And if they're meeting in a school building, I doubt seriously that most of those school buildings have their armed security or whatever security they have there on Sunday when the children aren't there for school. So I'm not going to discriminate against them having that right either. So I will certainly vote for this bill because I believe every congregation, regardless of where they meet, has the right to defend themselves. And so I'm certainly going to vote for this. Thank you.
What purpose, gentlemen from Wake, Representative Martin Rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Members, I wanted to address a point that the gentleman from Beaufort made earlier regarding the constitutionality of existing law. Both the federal and the North Carolina constitutions, which the gentleman referenced, read a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed. Now, case law has said with regard to the federal constitution that the current restrictions, similar to the ones we have in place now in North Carolina, certainly do not violate the Second Amendment. But I think it's important also to look at our state constitution, which goes more clearly and in more detail on exactly what the founders meant when they said the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Our North Carolina Constitution says specifically, quote, "Nothing herein shall justify the practice of carrying concealed weapons or prevent the General Assembly from enacting penal statutes against that practice," end quote. So there may or may not be reasons to oppose existing law, but constitutional grounds are not one of them.
For what purpose, gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, rise.
Debate the bill.
Gentleman has the floor to debate the bill second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I was actually, I'm glad you bring up that point because the Supreme Court has actually ruled in D.C. versus Heller that the carrying of a firearm is definitely a personal right, that it does not mean militia, a.k.a. military. It means the people, the general people. So thank you for making that point very well for me. I appreciate that. The other thing is I oftentimes hear from some of the people in here that if it saves one life, it's worth doing. We've talked about this in the past. Well, you know, if this saves one life, it's worth it. I would agree with that in this particular instance for sure. Yesterday, when this bill was in committee, we had four pastors from various denominations throughout the state of North Carolina that came in and spoke in very strong support of this bill. In fact, one of them brought a letter with him that was signed by 160 North Carolina churches. 160, that's a lot of churches. And I'm betting there's a lot more that would have signed on had they known it was available. So I find that very interesting that that happened. Also, in just taking a couple of moments here, I looked on the internet to look at statistics on gun violence. So Pew Research, which, I don't know, they might not be a right-leaning or left-leaning organization, I'm not sure, but according to Pew Research, gun homicide rates since 1993, Representative Adams, is down 49%. 49%. Almost cut in half. Why? As Representative Adams pointed out, because that's when the concealed carry and open carry and constitutional carry movements started in the United States. Now, Pew, I think, is a little bit more conservative than my second reference, NPR. I don't think they're very conservative. NPR did a report that states exactly the same statistics, citing the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and the Center for Disease Controls. Matter of fact, look at some of these numbers. Gun crimes, non-fatal gun crimes, dropped from 1.5 million to 467,000 in the United States from 1993. Think about that. If it saves one life, just one. The facts are there, people. Matter of fact, I like to talk about people who came up with these ideas. You talk about you love peace, Representative Jones, I do too. And thank you for agreeing with me. You and I need to get together more often. I think we have a lot more commonalities than you believe. We love the people. We love the people we represent. Folks, this is a problem that gets solved not by hiring more security and more police and putting more people out there in those types of jobs, because we've discussed that. Who's paying that bill? The churches can't afford it. The state can't afford it. It's not a viable option. The viable option is let the people, most of them already currently have guns. If they want to carry, let them do it. If their churches want to let them, let the churches let them do it. If the churches don't want to let them, that's fine. I already told you about Samuel Colt. Let's talk about another thing that happened years ago, about 1871. I just happen to have one of those, so I remember the model. 1871, there was a gun that was also manufactured by Samuel Colt. It was called the Peacemaker. Very nice little gun, nickel-plated, 44 caliber. The Colt Peacemaker. Why? I'll say it again. An armed society is a polite society. Don't infringe on the people's rights. It's not the militia, it's the people's rights. Look it up, you'll find out, you'll agree, and then like Abe, you'll vote green on the bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 43 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye, those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 71 having voted in the affirmative and 37 in the negative. Senate Bill 43 passes its second reading without objection, will be read a third time.
General Senator Nocline and Max.
Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 43 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. Senate Bill 43 having passed its third reading will be sent to the Senate by a special messenger. And it is ordered engrossed as well. Senate Bill 116, the clerk will read.
Senators Johnson, Sawyer, and Britt, Senate Bill 116, a bill to be entitled Putting North Carolina Back to Work Act. General Senator of North Carolina enacts.
Representative Majeed, is the gentleman wishing to change his vote on that last bill?
Yes, sir. I made a complete error.
The gentleman will be recorded as having voted no on the second reading of Senate Bill 43. Gentleman from Lincoln, Representative Sain, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, members. Senate Bill 116 seeks to address some of the issues that we've had before this body prior, as we're looking for guidance from the federal government on the PPP loans, but also how we're treating the unemployment insurance benefits that have been received in 2020, and what we do to make sure that those folks with state taxable income for taxpayers with an adjusted gross income below $150,000 are held harmless for this unemployment that they took during that time frame. And a lot of that due to the fact that they couldn't help, but as we shut down an economy, that they couldn't go to work, and we didn't feel it was fair to tax those folks. It also addresses the issue of the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Compensation Program. That's the agreement that provides an additional $300 per week to unemployment insurance claimants through September 6, 2021, as we are hearing from our employers, as we are hearing from folks across the state, as we try to get this economy back going, moving forward, getting it back to more what we would consider normal society, getting folks back to work is an important part of that. So this would take us away from that agreement. It mirrors what 24 other states have done already, including South Carolina, Tennessee, and Georgia. Also, just this morning, if I'm correct, the Maryland governor announced that they were going to be doing the same thing. So it puts us in line with about half the states that are moving forward, but more particularly states all around us, as we're always competitive with the states around us, making sure that we stay and remain competitive and that we get our folks back to work as the pandemic subsides, as vaccines have rolled out, as many people are getting back to normal as quickly as we can. We want to make sure that our economy is not lagging behind. We've seen a number of groups get behind this proposal that's before you. There was a different proposal in the Senate. But this proposal, the North Carolina Chamber of Commerce has issued a statement on it, as well as Civitas and many other groups that have been out there that are in support of it. We had a good talk yesterday in finance. I realize there's many opinions on the issue, but do believe that this is a way for us to move our state forward and to get back to work. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Members, upon motion of Representative Greer Martin of Wake County, the chair is happy to extend the courtesy of the gallery to Isabella Nesbeth, Jacqueline Johnson, and Andrew Lake from Cary Academy. If y'all are with us, will you please stand? Thank you for being with us today. For what purpose does the gentleman from Watauga, Representative Pickett, arise?
Speak to the bill. The
gentleman's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stood before you a few weeks ago and debated the PPP part of this bill. Well, I think we've said enough on that one. Representative Sain did a good job of saying the technical parts of this bill. But right now I'm going to tell you about the part of the unemployment. Folks in my district, they need people to fill jobs. The jobs are there. We've started our tourist season and many of our businesses can't open because they do not have employees. Those jobs were filled before the pandemic started. Those same jobs are there. So we need to pass this bill so those people could go back to work. The jobs are there. They're willing to give them a job, and they're willing to pay them good. We've got plenty of places that are offering $12 and $15 an hour to go back to work, and they're not filling the jobs. So I'm standing here before you today to ask you to support this bill and get North Carolina back to work. Thank you.
Gentleman from Cleveland, Representative Moore, is recognized to send forth an amendment. Clerk will read.
Representative Moore moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 6, by inserting the following.
Representative Moore, you're recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate that. Members, the one question that I've received from a number of folks on this side of the aisle and on the other side of the aisle had to do with ensuring that there was access to child care, that folks were not going to be having to deal with that. And so we can fix that right now. I can take that issue off the table. This amendment appropriates $250 million to take care of the child care subsidies and will fully erase the wait list at this time. So this will do this. This will be money coming from the ARP funds. I've checked with our appropriations chairs. The funds are there to do it. And I can think of nothing that signals more the commitment of this House to ensuring that everyone who is able to work is able to do so, that child care is dealt with, and I would encourage everyone to vote for it. And I hope with the adoption of this, perhaps this bill can pass this chamber unanimously. With that, I'll stand for any questions.
Is there discussion or debate on the amendment? Hearing none, question before the House is the passage of the amendment. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Gentleman from Cleveland, Representative Moore, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you very much. Members, this bill is critical. I don't know about where everyone's been the last few weeks when we've not been in Raleigh, but I've been all over this state. In fact, I even traveled outside the state for some business on a couple of things. The thing I've heard repeatedly wherever I am is that business is saying we can't find people to work. You can leave this building and drive within a quarter mile, and you can find help wanted signs everywhere. Jobs are needed. Workers are needed. Right now, we have a system in place that is essentially incentivizing not working. That is not right. That is not good for people. That is not good for this state. The businesses of this state have gone through so much, and particularly the small businesses. Look at what these small businesses who employ people have dealt with just in the last 12 months. Civil unrest, where a lot of businesses were destroyed. COVID-19, where businesses could not operate. All of these challenges. Now the businesses are back. They're trying to operate. But what's happening? They can't find people to work. We should not have a system in place that has been thrust upon us by this federal program where folks are incentivized not to work. It doesn't make sense. It's not how we can operate this economy. Now, right now, the unemployment extension through the federal government goes through September. We also like to have a tourist industry. A number of you on that side of the aisle and this side of the aisle are in the mountains, or on the beach communities. What's happening there? A lot of these businesses are not able to find folks to work. And if someone can receive more by not going to work, why would they go to work? Look, we should never as a state sanction such a thing. You know, we've heard multiple stories around the state on this. And that is the thing that I hear more than anything else when I'm out traveling right now, and I submit that you are. Let me give you a couple statistics. The North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association reports that restaurants in North Carolina are down 70,000 workers in this state. That is 17% of that industry's workforce. 17%. To date, there are 240,000 people in this state currently receiving unemployment benefits each week, according to the Department of Commerce, while at the same time, there is a shortage in workers to fill the jobs. Get this. North Carolina's workforce system, NC Works, lists over 200,000 current job openings. So you have 240 drawing unemployment, but on the same site, you can see there's 200,000 jobs being offered just right there. But that does not include every opening, since not all employers utilize the system. These benefits with that come from the federal government are adding an additional $300 on top of what the state's provided, and that's just simply becoming an impediment and a discouragement for folks looking for work. Is North Carolina unique? Well, no. 26 other states have already done what this bill proposes to do, to try to reopen those economies, move forward, and put their states back to work. Our neighbor to the state, South Carolina, the state of South Carolina, is already doing this. And as a result, what's happening? Folks are going back to work. Their economy is surging ahead of us. I submit to you, if we don't make these changes, their beach communities are going to do better, not just this year, but in years to come because of this. This is absolutely critical. And I've talked to folks on both sides of the aisle, and I've not heard a single person tell me that they don't recognize that this is a problem, that this is a problem around the state with not having folks to work these jobs. This is probably one of the more critical issues that we're now dealing with. If you had that crystal ball and we could have looked back 2 years ago, we didn't see COVID-19. Imagine if we could. Imagine if just a year ago we could have foreseen, yeah, we finally got past COVID-19, the economy's ready to get moving, but government now has policies in place that are keeping the economy from moving forward. We'd want to make sure that doesn't happen. But we're in a situation right now where business is ready to operate, but we have this incentive right now that incentivizes folks not working. We cannot do that. We must not do that. This fixes it. This is a balanced approach to do so. It allows another month for this to continue, to allow folks to transition, folks to find a job. And we've just put in here money. So if somebody needs child care, they can have it. That appropriation eliminates the wait list entirely in one swoop. What else does this do? This also goes back. We've already passed nearly unanimously the bill that allowed the paycheck protection loans to be treated for tax purposes the same for state as it is for federal. By the way, every other state in the nation has done that except for North Carolina and Hawaii. That's it. We're the only two states that for some reason are treating this differently, imposing this tax on these small businesses who have suffered so much. Enough is enough. This needs to happen. What are we also doing for the workers? This bill also says that the income that was received for unemployment by those workers in the state is tax exempt. They do not pay tax on it. It is treated the same as the federal government too. So there again, you're taking care of our workers. My friends, I don't know of a more balanced approach to try to pass a bill. I don't know of a more serious commitment that's ever been made to strike a bipartisan compromise on a bill. I do not want to see this issue used as a political football. It is too important. It is way too important. You have businesses right now, once again, on the verge of closing because they can't find people to work. And we don't need to send more money from Washington to try to solve it. All we're doing there is building a debt that our grandchildren will never get paid. This is a way to stop it, to fix it now, to restore strength back to our economy, and to finally move forward, to put all of these shutdowns, to put all of this with the pandemic, to put all of this finally in the rearview mirror and move this state forward. My friends, this is a common sense, reasonable approach to taking care of the people of this state, of businesses, and the overall economy of this state. With that, I would encourage every one of you to vote for this bill. Thank you.
What purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Lofton, arise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman's recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, in September of 2020, our unemployment rate was 7.1%. In October, it fell to 6.4%, then 6.3%, then 6.1%, then 6.0%. In February, it was 5.6%. In March, 4.6%. In April, the latest numbers available, it's at 4.4%. well below the national average of 5.7 and below our neighbors to the south, South Carolina, at 5.0. Also, I understand from the Department of Employment Security that we have seen a week-over-week decline in employment claims, 10% week-over-week the last month or 6 weeks. People are returning to work. Our unemployment rate proves it. They're returning to work. Our decline in new claims proves it. The fact is that we are making progress, but we're not there yet. And that's because we're still in a recovery. We still have 250,000 North Carolinians who will be hurt if we cut these benefits. They're still trying to find work. They're still out there in a recovery. And it's 250,000 people for whom we will take $300 a week out of their paychecks or out of their pockets. It's precisely the wrong time to cut that assistance. Additionally, cutting these benefits not only hurts individuals and families, it hurts our communities and our state because it will cost us $500 million in lost wage replacement that we are receiving. That's what we would give up. So we're taking money out of people's pockets during recovery and giving up $500 million that's coming into our economy. The fact is that we already have a mechanism for dealing with people who may refuse to accept suitable employment. DES can actually deny benefits. Employers can report if they made an offer to someone and that person refused to accept suitable employment. They can be cut off from benefits. We already have a mechanism for dealing with this problem, but we don't need to cast an overly broad net, not for the 250,000 people who are counting on this money right now in the middle of a recovery. And so I please urge everyone to vote no on this bill.
Mr. Speaker.
What purpose the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford Ross?
I was curious if the representative from Mecklenburg County would yield for a question.
If who would?
The gentleman from Mecklenburg County, Representative.
Representative Lofton, do you yield for a question?
I do.
Joan yields.
Thank you. Sorry I cut you in your last comment there. I was just curious if you were aware that last week Mecklenburg County, where you and I are both from, announced that they were unable to open many of our parks, including Ramsey Creek Swim Park, because they could not find lifeguards at $13 an hour.
Thank you for that question. It's funny. I just heard that indirectly, actually. I think I heard that. Am I right that you made the observation that they just need to be paid more and then they would come back to work? And I know we had a similar problem with bus drivers in Mecklenburg County with our school system, where for years we've had problems filling bus driver positions. And that's because they'll train bus drivers and the bus drivers will then go drive for the city because the city pays more to do that work. And again, the bottom line, if you take out the anecdotes and look at the data, our unemployment rate is falling. It's falling month over month. It's falling week over week. We're doing better than South Carolina, and we're doing better than the national average.
Mr. Speaker, one more question.
Gentlemen, yield to an additional question.
Sure.
Representative
Lofton, based on your comments a few minutes ago about how unemployment is decreasing, don't you find it strange that even our own county can't fill lifeguard positions at $13 an hour if the unemployment rate continues to be drastically low, as you assert?
Again, I think that's an issue. I can't speak to the lifeguard industry. I don't know what would be a good wage to attract lifeguards at that rate, but I do know our unemployment rate, again, is falling. We're almost back to where we were in March of last year, and we're ahead of South Carolina and ahead nationally.
For what purpose does a lady from Wake, Representative Von Hafen, rise?
To speak to the bill.
Ladies recognize to debate the bill.
Thank you. Members, I rise today to speak against this bill and uplift the challenges that many people, especially women and mothers, have when trying to return to the workplace. When COVID-19 forced businesses, schools, and child care centers to close or shift to remote work to preserve the safety of our communities, we all learned how important child care is in the work to our workforce. DES has reported that the lack of child care is the number one reason why
Mr. Speaker.
What purpose the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, rise?
Would the representative yield for a question?
Representative Von Hafen, do you yield for a question?
Not right now, thank you.
She does yield. Lady continues to have the floor.
DES has reported that the lack of child care is the number one reason people are unemployed in North Carolina right now. Both the prohibitively high cost of quality child care and the lack of available child care forces parents to stay home so that they can care for their children. I want to thank Speaker Moore for his amendment, but honestly, these federal American Rescue Plan funds passed by Democrats in Congress were already going to child care block grants. This is not new state investment, and it is not the recurring funding that we need to truly help our child care industry. First, child care is a very expensive proposition. In 2020, the average cost of child care in North Carolina was $9,200 a year. This is greater than the cost of in-state college tuition. A working parent who receives no subsidy assistance will spend more than one-third of their total income on child care. Keep in mind that our state's minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. For a single parent making minimum wage in North Carolina paying the average cost of child care, they would only have $393 left each month to pay their bills, their food costs, and to pay rent to put a roof over their head. Parents cannot afford to work for wages that don't support their families or pay for child care. Second, access to care is just as important as cost, especially for the 44% of North Carolinians living in child care deserts. 99 counties out of 100 are classified as child care deserts in North Carolina. That means that for every available child care slot that exists, there are 5 infant and toddlers waiting for a chance to receive care. Even worse, 10 counties in North Carolina are extreme child care deserts, meaning that there are 10 infants and toddlers waiting for those slots. Waiting lists for child care, for subsidized child care slots are increasing all over our state. Currently, we have 19,629 children on the child care subsidy waiting list. Adding to the problem of the lack of available child care is the fact that roughly 43% of our child care centers in North Carolina closed during the pandemic. When COVID-19 forced these centers to shut down, the work of caring for and educating our children fell mostly to women. During the first 10 months of the recession, women across North Carolina lost a net of 5.4 million jobs. That's 1 million more job losses than men. Without access to available child care, these women and their families will continue to struggle to regain a financial foothold after the pandemic. Finally, some families just aren't ready to send their kids back to child care due to safety concerns. Not all children are able to get vaccinated, which means that many families will have to weigh their risk of exposure when returning to the workforce. For all these reasons, without affordable and available child care options, parents will not be able to return to work, and our economy will continue to suffer. Instead, we have a real solution. We have a bill sitting in appropriations that will raise child care subsidy rates. Raising child care subsidy rates will keep providers open, keep the cost of child care down, raise wages for essential child care workers, and open slots for the 19,000 plus children waiting. That's proactive.
For what, Lady Spin, for what purpose does the gentleman from Brunswick, Representative Eiler, arise?
A point of order to the chair.
Gentleman's recognized for a point of order.
Are we debating this bill or just the general topic of child care and other bills?
The chair will just simply direct the lady to keep her remarks as to the substance of this bill. Lady has the floor.
Let's proactively work on solutions for the real reasons for unemployment. Rather than putting mothers, fathers, and families in positions where they will be cut off from assistance by passing this bill, or they're forced to take a job that doesn't pay them enough money to pay for their bills and food and child care. This prospect is not only unjust, but it's simply cruel. I urge you to join me in voting against this bill.
What purpose does the lady from New Hanover, Representative Butler, rise?
To speak to the bill.
Ladies recognize and debate the bill.
Friends, you know, there is dignity in work. I think we would all agree about that. Working hard and feeling pride at providing for yourself and for your family, that is truly a good feeling, and it's something I know that we all value here. That was taken away by this pandemic for many. Business owners and employees alike were struck with fear, a fear of the inability to provide for your basic human needs and for your family. I got those emails, and I know that each and every one of you got them as well. There was panic in those emails, desperation, pain, anger sometimes. And in response, this body did an awful lot. Early on in the pandemic, we pushed out dollars of relief, and we did that in a bipartisan manner. But this bill, or at least the precursor of it, concerning the tax treatment of the Paycheck Protection Plan, is something we've been talking about for weeks. There's been plenty of heartburn about it, too, on both sides of the aisle. But it seems as though we have gotten to the point where we understand that the breadth and the magnitude of this pandemic warrants non-taxability of Paycheck Protection Plans and the deductibility of the expenses associated with those for business. But if that is true, if this pandemic was so bad, if the breadth and the magnitude of this pandemic was so bad that we need to give businesses across this state a double dip, if we need to deviate from our normal tax protocol, and we do, then surely it is the same for the employees that work for those companies. Why would we take away a federal benefit from 240,000 North Carolinians? So some companies get the double dip and the employees get no dip at all. That's just patently unfair. And friends, if we're going to have this conversation, it's time for us to talk about a living wage. We're not paying people enough to meet their basic human needs.
Let me suspend momentarily. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, arise?
Point of order. Would the representative stick to the bill at hand and not other ideals that are out there?
Again, the chair will direct all members, per our rules, to debate only the substance of a bill and not things that are not part of a given bill. The lady continues to have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're talking about wages, and so that's what I'm talking about. We're not paying people enough to meet their basic human needs. It is impossible for anyone to live in dignity and provide for themselves at the current minimum wage. It is just impossible. You know, I think everyone in here is old enough to remember. I know I am. But sometime in the 1970s or 80s, I think, we made a big mistake in this country. We started valuing shareholders and shareholder profits over employees. Now, you know, when you were growing
Speaker.
Everybody in your community.
Point of order, please.
The lady will suspend momentarily. For what purpose does the gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, arise?
I'll reiterate what Leader Bell said, and that we're not talking about stocks from the 1970s in this bill, nor are we talking about minimum wage. I don't think that's addressed in the bill.
Again, the chair would simply direct the lady to keep her remarks on the bill. Continue to have the floor.
We made a big mistake because it is possible for both shareholders and employees to thrive in harmony. When I was growing up, one worker in a household could provide for a family. They had pensions and benefits and insurance. And nobody I know has those anymore except all of us sitting in here. Think about it. Think about the people in your neighborhood. They don't have pensions and benefits, nor do they have a living wage.
Mr. Speaker,
each and every year,
lady will spend. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, arise?
Point of order. Once again, Mr. Speaker, we're deviating from the bill at hand, and the representative seems to ignore your guidance.
Yeah. Representative Butler, the chair would just simply ask again, please keep your remarks on the bill and the substance of the bill that's before the body. The lady continues to have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I have one concluding paragraph or thought. Each and every year, a living wage bill is filed in this chamber, and each and every year, it is summarily sent to the Rules Committee to die. If we refuse to allow the exploitation of our citizens just for skyrocketing corporate profits, they would more eagerly return to the workplace because everyone wants the dignity of work. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
What purpose does the gentleman from Union, Representative Harper, rise?
Speak on the bill.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the bill.
I'm going to try to dispassionately talk about a couple of facts. The forced pandemic closures have affected supply and demand. I work in the construction industry, and I know this all too well, and you do too. What we're seeing here is a lack of businesses and industry to provide the needed supplies and goods and services to sustain a recovery. And what's happening is we have almost hyperinflation. Goods and materials in the construction industry are up 40 and 60%. We have jobs that are delayed almost a year simply because they cannot produce the roof bar joists for buildings. It is so bad that they lack workers to return to pre-pandemic output. That it's at the level that jobs will go on hold and we will be forced into another recession. Ladies and gentlemen, that's not hyperbole. That's where we are. We have the unemployment rate high like we do today, not because there's a lack of jobs out there. It's because workers are not moving in to fill those jobs. If we don't do an act right now to rectify the system, we will start to see a slowdown. And then coupled with the high unemployment that we have, we will see us push into a recession. I ask that you pass this bill, common sense bill, to help workers get back into jobs and save North Carolina.
Well, purpose is the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Harris Rice.
Debate the bill.
The gentleman's recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know where to begin on this. I guess I'll start with the economy is a complicated thing. And to point to a single policy as the reason for all of our ills is just disingenuous. It's interesting that we, you know, attach this to the PPP loan forgiveness, not loan forgiveness, but loan deductibility and the unemployment income non-taxability, because in normal times, I wouldn't support those policies. They're technically unfair. PPP loans, those are already forgiven. You are not taxed on PPP loans. And unemployment insurance, that is income. Just like everybody else, that is income. And on normal times, those should be taxable. Or the expenses shouldn't be deductible, I should say. Income should be taxable. But these aren't normal times. This is a once-in-a-generation pandemic. And in those situations, you have to put aside conventional economic thought. You know, I kneel at the altar of the free market as well. But that's a repeated game situation. And when we have situations where it's this once-in-a-lifetime thing, you have to change the status quo. You have to change your thinking to give people the aid that they need at the time that they need it. And that is why I happily supported the PPP expenses and the unemployment income deductibility. Happily supported them. Because I knew that's what we needed to do. We had the ability. And we have the right to help out our citizens when we need it. And the same thing is true, the exact same thing is true of this federal unemployment pandemic insurance. Again, there is no conclusive evidence that the unemployment insurance is the reason people aren't returning to work. You have anecdotes, I have anecdotes. I can trade you one for one all day. But the research shows, again, child care is a big issue. We've taken a step forward closer with that today. And again, I do not want this to become a political football as well. And I hope that child care money, which is going to be needed after I vote against this bill, I hope we'll find a new way to put that bill after the governor vetoes this bill, I hope. Because I don't want to play politics with this. I want to do what's necessary. And there's not just one policy that's going to fix this. This unemployment insurance is not what is costing people to go back to work. It is what is making people able to make their ends meet. And again, I had to check myself. I heard the word hyperinflation. My heavens, hyperinflation. That is 10,000% price level increase a year. Talk to the people of Germany what that's like. We are not in a level of hyperinflation. For the last 30 years, we've struggled to not have deflation. And again, I don't know if y'all remember, the Suez Canal was blocked for about 3 weeks. You don't think that's some of the reason that we have supply issues?
So don't put this at the feet of the straw man argument that people are sitting at home lazy because they don't want to go to work. People want to go to work. When I look at policies, I think of it on a cost and benefit. And in no way do the benefits of this policy exceed the cost. Again, it's going to cost us $500 million just not accepting any of this federal aid anymore. That's $500 million not going into our economy. And again, even if your argument is people make more money on unemployment than they do working, we take that away, that's still less money going into our economy. So how much of that is helping our economy? Again, our unemployment rate has been steadily declining over the past 8 months. Things are working. People are getting back to work. And again, this is going to end on its own accord in 3 months. This bill has a 30-day grace period in it, so that's 2 months total. 2 months total. I don't think a couple lifeguards, I don't think the need for a couple lifeguards is going to send us into a new recession. And I also don't think lifeguards are the one who are taking unemployment insurance right now. My sisters were lifeguards when they were in high school. They waited till for school to get out to start their jobs. So let's not keep pushing forward these false arguments, because it's just not true. Yes, we need child care support. I'm glad it's in this bill. It needs to be in another bill. But we do not need to cut off the legs of the people who need this the most. We're 2 months away from this solving itself at the end, on its own accord. And if things are still troublesome then, we can take more looks then. But cutting this off now is just plain cruel, and I don't think we should do it. And so I encourage all of you to vote against this bill. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Columbus, Representative Jones, arise?
It's a debate bill.
Gentlemen, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I hesitated to debate this bill, but I just think you need to look at it in a different perspective. I don't have a document that's been pre-printed for me to read. I don't have a bunch of statistics for you to give out. But for most of you, North Carolina looks a little different than where I'm from. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about where I'm from, Tabor City, North Carolina, down in Columbus County. And I'm going to tell you what this has done, this federal money has done for my area. We've been in business for 49 years. I can't pay a laborer to come work. I have a lot in Lumberton. I can't pay a laborer to come work. I've got good friends in the restaurant industry, had two restaurants that has been shut to one down to 4 days a week because they can't find laborers to work. This is killing small town North Carolina. And many of you get to sit in the larger cities and you don't see the effect of this. This is a good bill. This is a good way to bring pride and work back to the citizens. Representative Art made a great point. If you're not self-employed or you're not in the need of these industries where you're being cut off and you don't have your supplies to do business, man, it's a murder. This is not, what's happening in the feds right now is not putting good money in. It's taking great money out. It's killing this state. I urge you to think about what's happening closely. Not a Democrat thing, not a Republican thing, but a people thing. Your small towns will not be here if this continues. Your small businesses are eroding. There's every one of you can ride down the street and you're seeing doors closed that you never thought. Businesses have been in North Carolina for hundreds of years, decades, having to shut their doors because of what this is doing. It is destroying us. I urge you to vote yes for this bill. It's a good bill, and it will help us get on the right track to bringing this state back.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the gentleman debate
recognized
the
bill. Debate the bill.
And I, like Representative Jones, don't have prepared statistics and remarks, but I would argue that I live in what some would call a small town. It's the town of Goldston. I think last check we probably got about 220 people. I count us as a small town. We've got businesses that have been there for 100 years. The businesses that are there are people that are good, industrious people that really tried to work. And I'll have to acknowledge that I'm speaking because I want to clear up some of the undertone that I think that you do hear when you hear this debate. And I want to reemphasize, sometimes it's really, really hard, not only when you're up here, but really when you've come through a certain lot in life. It is really, really hard sometimes to see a different side of what's going on. And I think what has made me uncomfortable is that I am a small business owner. And we have to make decisions every single day, especially with me spending all my time up here and having to have some backup at the office, about how we pay people, what's competitive, what's not competitive, what will get people in. But I, honest to goodness, in my heart, just don't know people who don't want to work. My support of HB 654 and the discussion we had about that was because those are the kind of people I know. When I heard one of the ladies that was presenting to us yesterday at LCI, she was almost in tears when she was saying when she went blind, how desperately she didn't want to be on government assistance. And it's not just because of the emasculating feeling that you get from that, but it's also because of how you are viewed. And we as a society have gotten to a point now when we look at people who aren't in our circumstances, we're getting kind of quick to blame. We're looking at them and we're putting them in boxes. We're deciding where they should be and what they should be happy with and what they should appreciate. We look at them and we make decisions about how happy they ought to be able to go to work for $7 an hour. We look at them and we start making decisions that you should be ecstatic that I'm allowing you to come work at my business. And I'm going to tell you again, as a business owner, when I look at people that I'm trying to hire them, I look at those people as people who want to be part of something. And I try to figure out what is it that will make you want to be part of what I'm doing as opposed to being where you are. And if we are at a point where we, honest to goodness, are thinking in our minds that there's somebody who's getting $440 a week and they think they've hit the gold mine and they want to be home, I'm not sure that that's a reality. We have had debates about affordable housing. You know, one of the things we talk about in Chatham County all the time is our police officers can't even live in the county. And these are people who are working good jobs. Our teachers can't live in the county. We tried to run a bill in Durham so that Durham could help supplement teachers and get them back to living in the communities that they serve. So if somebody with $440 a week, if you really believe they're sitting at home because of this federal money, and I'm not telling you that I disagree with your discussions. I'm not telling you, Representative Arp, he's my friend, I call him Dean, and I apologize, but Representative Arp makes some good points, and Speaker Moore has made some good points. This is a complicated subject, but let me tell you what I know about complicated subjects. You can't run that bill in a day. So number one, if we're serious about getting a good bipartisan solution to getting us all back to work, that takes our leadership and your leadership sitting down, talking, and trying to work this out and recognizing those different sides. That's what some of us are here for, is to help you with those sides. To understand that for some people, when they saw this pandemic, things happened. And they got on unemployment and they decided, I'm not going back to work because now that I can't work while we were actually in the pandemic, I'm going back to community college. I'm actually going to try to better myself. I'm going to try to get myself in a position to get a better job. And if it's not working on Robert Reeves's timeline for when he wants to hire somebody, well, so be it. Because I don't want to spend all my life working $7 an hour. So I wanted to do that. Some people decided to go into the university system. Some people made the decision that it was more important to them. They learned during this pandemic, I need to be home with my kids. That my working three jobs isn't helping my child get a better life. Do you realize we're in a generation right now where the children that we are producing actually don't have the opportunity to have a better life? That frightens me. That frightens me much more than waiting two more months for unemployment to run out. So maybe somebody made that decision that I've got to stay home with these kids right now, even though it hurts financially, to make sure that they've got a chance to advance. Maybe somebody decided that because of the fact that this has exploited the problem that we have with health care, that they've decided my dying mother is better off with me sitting here taking care of her and spending her last years here in my house than being stuck somewhere in a home where she can't see me, can't touch me, and to live her last couple of months like that. Maybe that's the decision I've made. So again, I'm struggling that we kind of are starting to couch this in the, you got lazy people sitting at home that are getting this grand total of $440 a week, and they won't go back to work, and that's the problem. I have to agree with Representative Harris that we just posted in one of the counties some posts for lifeguards. Their problem with getting lifeguards isn't that the lifeguards are home making $440 a week. The problem with getting the lifeguards is they got to pick people that can be lifeguards. There are about three of us in here that could be lifeguards. The rest of us will be unemployed. Hate to tell you, those days are gone. So with that being said, let's think of everything that people are suffering through right now. Let's not chop off our noses despite our faces. This problem ends September 6th. If this is the issue, then on September 7th, there will be a glorious rain of people falling into work and the world's going to end. But my suspicion is that's not what's going to happen. My suspicion is this money's going to cut off and we're still going to have problems with employment that have various reasons that is happening. So in conclusion, I would say I am very supportive of keeping these small businesses because in Golston, like in Tabor City and like in a lot of your small towns, there is nothing better for me than dealing with small business mom and pop folks because they are the lifeblood. I love walking into these stores and knowing not just the people working there every day, not just the lady who's sitting there and helping me buy my lottery ticket, but the person who employs her that I can go to and say, come on, man, help me get that $30 for that lottery ticket. It's nice to talk to those people. Everybody loves small business. None of us want to wake up in a world where we've got corporations everywhere because we don't have any more small businesses because we've killed them. But what we're doing today isn't going to kill our small businesses. And if you want to support them, I will give you a list of ways that we could be supportive of those businesses that will help them keep going. I respect the thought behind this. I respect the attempts to work this out. I would love to sit and engage after this vote today to really see if we can work a bill that we can push. By the way, I say the same thing about a budget. I'd love to send something up 120 to 0 to tell the Senate to get off their behinds on the budget. Love to do that. But anyway, with that being said, but our disagreeing on this particular bill isn't an issue of we don't want to get this solved. But please, let's not denigrate the people who are stuck in unemployed because I promise you they don't want to be home, not working, not productive, and hearing people like us who still have employment talk about them like there is something fundamentally wrong with them character-wise and that they are somehow living off of us. Thank you.
For what purposes, the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jones, arise. All right. Thank you, Representative Jones. Further discussion or debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of the House Committee Substitute Senate Bill 116 on its second reading. All those in favor will vote aye. All those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 71 having voted in the affirmative and 36 in the negative. House Committee Substitute Senate Bill 116 has passed its second reading and will be read a third time.
Gentleman from North Carolina next.
Question before the House is the passage of the House Committee Substitute to Senate Bill 116 on its third reading. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. House Committee Substitute to Senate Bill 116 having passed its third reading will be ordered engrossed and sent to the Senate for concurrence.
Members will stand at ease momentarily. The chair is going to confer with the rules chairman briefly to see where we are on our schedule next week. I do want to thank the members for the good, solid, spirited debate on the on not only on the previous bill but on the others today, and certainly think that we have effectively utilized the time that we've spent this week legislating. We'll stand at ease momentarily. Representative Sain, gentleman would approach, please. Representative Reeves, gentleman approach. The House will come back to order. Members, we have an, let me go ahead and advise members of our schedule for next week, of where we are. We are going to not have any votes on Monday. There will be a no vote session at 4 p.m. on Monday, which will be the next time that the House convenes. I do expect, however, that we're going to have votes on Tuesday of next week, and Wednesday, and possibly Thursday. We have had the benefit of some short weeks, frankly, because of how diligent the House was in getting through our business
so quickly. Many may recall, those, of course, those here and those who are watching may not be as much aware, but prior to our crossover week, there usually is more of a log jam of bills, and we have to be here many hours. In fact, some of us who've been here were here in years past where we were here first thing in the morning and actually found ourselves here rolling in past midnight into the next morning to try to get the business done. This year, that did not have to happen. All of our sessions truly happened in the light of day, and we saw a lot of good work come out of this chamber, and we are now also considering some Senate bills. The Senate is also considering some House bills, so things are moving along. The budget process is not moving perhaps as quickly as a lot of us would like to at this point. And in just a few moments, one of the appropriations chairs, I think Representative Sane, is going to make an announcement about that. It is the intention of the chair that next week the area committees are going to continue their work to try to gather information and from the various agencies and what the needs are. And I also want to address this because I've had a couple members who've asked me about their respective appropriations bills. You should never read into anything the fact that an appropriations bill has, a standalone appropriations bill has not moved by itself. Many of these bills, in fact, most of these bills are the kinds of items that would be taken up in the budget process itself. They're generally not going to be standalone bills. So, for those who are interested in ensuring that policy items they've identified through legislation get incorporated into the budget, this is probably a good time to make sure that you are talking to those appropriations chairs and make sure that those area chairs know what your needs are, what your interests are. This is definitely the time to be having those conversations. But it is the intention of the chair that next week the area committees will keep working through their process, and if for some reason we have not made appreciable that we've moved the ball down the road much more further in the budget process, the House will commence its own budget process irrespective of what the precedent has been, and we will undertake a budget process from the House, and we will originate a budget from the House. So that is where we are at this point. So we have basically this next week to work through that, and then the next week I would anticipate members, regardless of whether we receive something or not, the House will move forward with a budget. For what purpose, the gentleman from Lincoln, Representative Sane, rise.
For an announcement.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and as the Speaker just indicated to you all and in one of the committees this morning in IT appropriations, Representative Meyer and I had an exchange wondering about the budget process. So my privilege to advise you all that next week, as we have been working diligently, but also waiting on the Senate to release staff. We don't have unlimited staff, but as we've been waiting, your chairs have been working. You attended Appropriations Committee meetings this week just to kind of get a feel of where we're at. We had some good discussions, but a timeline, and we also know that we have ARP funds that are kind of waiting on the sidelines and need to go out. There are many needs out there. So on Wednesday, we will have a full Appropriations Committee meeting at 9 a.m., but prior to that, on Monday, senior chairs are having a meeting virtually. On Tuesday, our area chairs will be meeting and talking and getting ready and gearing up for our appropriations process. So bear with us as the schedule is created on the fly, since we're trying to work around the schedule of our counterparts, but making sure that we have the necessary staff and the expertise that we need to make sure that we can put together a budget. But I think the Speaker was very clear, and I want to reiterate that the chairs of appropriation agree. We will have a House budget. We will have something for you to vote up or down, either way, and we will seek your input in that process. So that's kind of an overview of the schedule, and on Thursday we'll also do some work as well with the committee. So be ready for that if you're on appropriations, and as the Speaker advised you, if there are concerns, areas that you want to make sure that your senior chairs and your area chairs are aware of, please let us know that. Thank you very much.
Mr. Clerk, Chair is going to direct that Senate Bill 116 be transmitted to the Senate by special messenger. For what purpose does the gentleman from Polk, Representative Johnson, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If anybody sees my seatmate out in the halls, he's got a birthday tomorrow. He's very hard to miss. Please tell him happy birthday. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Forsyth, Representative Terry, rise?
For a point of personal privilege, sir.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you very much. I simply want to say happy anniversary to my spouse for 49 years of bliss. Today is my 49th wedding anniversary. Happy birthday, Fred. I hope you're listening, but I know you're not. You may be on the golf course or anywhere else.
Congratulations, Representative Terry. For what purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, rise?
A brief moment of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
My oldest son is actually graduating from high school this evening, so I'm rushing out of here to go see him graduate, and he will be attending. He had a couple of choices, but he chose NC State, so we're going to be a Wolfpack family. Simmer down now. So we're excited about that, and I just want to tell him congratulations. Very proud of you, son.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, rise?
For an announcement.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, you've heard the schedule for the week. Look in your inboxes for a caucus on Wednesday. We would not caucus on Tuesday, but look forward to a caucus on Wednesday, and we'll get you the information as soon as possible. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Moore, Representative Bowles, rise?
Mr. Speaker, having submitted a representative statement with the clerk, I ask that it be read and in its entirety upon adjournment and spread across the journal, and would like to be recognized to speak on the statement.
So ordered, and the gentleman is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask that the representative statement be read, and for Mr. Ray Lambert, who was enlisted in the United States Army at the age of 19 and served as a medic during World War II. He was in the first wave of Americans who landed on Omaha Beach in Normandy, France on June 6, 1944, known as D-Day. As a Army medic, he helped many wounded soldiers on D-Day, even after he himself was injured, including being shot in the elbow and hit with shrapnel. During his rendering aid to the wounded, a boat ramp was lowered onto his back near the shore, which broke his back and ended his efforts to assist the wounded soldiers. Ray was awarded 3 Purple Hearts, 2 Silver Stars, a Bronze Star, and the French Legion of Honor for his service in the military. In 2019, on the 75th anniversary of D-Day, Ray released his memoir, Every Man a Hero, which became a bestseller. Ray died earlier this spring on April the 9th, 2021, at the age of 100 at his home in Seven Lakes in Moore County. As the 77th anniversary of D-Day is coming up this Sunday, this is a fitting time to recognize the bravery, dedication, and longtime service of Arnold Raymond Ray Lambert, United States Army medic and an all-around American hero. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. For what purpose does the lady from Cabarrus, Representative Baker, rise?
For an announcement.
Lady has the floor.
I just want to let you all know Health Committee will meet on Tuesday morning, 10 o'clock in room 643. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, rise?
Renouncement.
Gentleman has the floor.
House Pensions Committee will meet in room 415 next Tuesday at 2 p.m.
Any further notice or announcements? For what purpose does the lady from Randolph, Representative Hurley, rise?
Thank you. For an announcement, please.
The lady has the floor.
Education Appropriations will meet in room 425 on Tuesday morning at 8:30. We will have discussion and we will have two presentations. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Alamance, Representative Riddell, rise?
For an announcement.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. General Government Appropriations will be meeting next Tuesday at 8:30 in the usual spot. Thank you.
Any further notices or announcements? Seeing none, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House to now adjourn to reconvene Monday, June 7th at 4 p.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Hall moves, seconded by Representative Bell, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Monday, June 7th at 4 p.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House stands adjourned.
A representative statement. A representative statement recognizing the life and service of D-Day hero Arnold Raymond Ray Lambert. Whereas Arnold Ray Lambert was born in Alabama in 1920, the son of a farm family that lost everything in the Great Depression. And whereas at age 19, Ray enlisted in the United States Army and during World War II, served as a medic in the 2nd Battalion, 16th Infantry Regiment, part of the Army's 1st Division, and known as the Big Red One in the Allied invasion in North Africa and Sicily. And whereas at age 24, and by then Staff Sergeant, who had trained in all the medics under his command, Ray was in the first wave of Americans who landed in Omaha Beach on June 6, 1944, D-Day in Normandy, France, as part of an Allied invasion and immediately came under heavy fire from the Germans. And whereas Ray and the medics he trained knew they were easy targets because of the big red crosses on the front of their helmets. But in the face of great personal danger, they persisted in getting soldiers who were drowning out of the water and taking care of those who were wounded. And whereas during the onslaught of enemy fire, Ray encouraged his medics to get the wounded behind the only shelter on the beach, a mound of concrete discarded by the Germans, which became known as Ray's Rock and was designated as such with a plaque in 2018 by the village of Colesville-sur-Mer, one of the first towns to be liberated by the Allied forces on D-Day. And whereas while fighting with all his might to save lives on the day of Omaha Beach, Ray was shot in the elbow and wound he patched himself and hit with shrapnel and tore a hole in his thigh and injured, he treated with a tourniquet bandage and a shot of morphine, but continued to go back into the water for the drowning and injured soldiers until he was struck by a landing ramp of a boat from the second wave of infantry, breaking his back. And Reyes, despite his badly bruised and battered body, Ray managed to get himself and a drowning soldier out of the water and behind the mound concrete on the beach, where he passed out from pain and blood loss. And whereas Ray was evacuated from Omaha Beach in the same boat as his brother, also an Army medic, who was seriously injured that day, and transported to a hospital in England, where when he was well enough, he helped prepare some wounded soldiers to go back to the battlefield, a mission that, by his account, bothered him because he knew what awaited the soldiers on the front line. And whereas Ray eventually set back to the States to complete his convalescence from the injured and sustained on Omaha Beach, and whereas over the course of a military career, Ray was awarded 3 Purple Hearts, 2 Silver Stars, a Bronze Star, and the French Legion of Honor. And whereas in his time of military ended, Ray enrolled in a graduate from Massachusetts Institute of Technology and founded 2 companies, including an industrial electrical contracting business. And whereas even as a civilian, Ray continued his involvement with the military through Society of the 1st Division and a distinguished member of 16th Infantry Regiment Association, and was a speaker to school groups and other organizations in the U.S. and other counties. He also participated in documentary about World War II American cemeteries in Europe, and where his race service of bravery was recognized by President Donald J. Trump during the 2019 ceremony recognizing the 75th anniversary of D-Day at an American cemetery overlooking Omaha Beach. And whereas in 2019, to coincide with the 75th anniversary of D-Day, Ray's memoir, Every Man a Hero, which written the bestseller author from Jim DeFelice, was released by HarperCollins. And whereas in Seven Lakes, Moore County, Ray's home overlooked Lake Almond, which the U.S. Army named Ray Lambert's Drop Zone. The purpose of the drop zone was to train soldiers to land in or near water while in combat, a task with which Ray was well acquainted. And whereas, without question, Ray was an incredibly brave man, but he also extremely humble despite all the accomplished on his battlefield in life. He was quoted in a newspaper article by saying, "I'm a person that makes a lot about myself. So many things happened because of where I was, what I did, not what I said." And whereas Ray died at the age of 100 in April, on April 9th, 2021, at his home in Seven Lakes, He survived by his wife, Barbara, and daughter, Linda McHenry. Ray was preceded by his son, Arnold Lambeth. Now, therefore, it is just and thrilling that the remarkable bravery, dedication, and lifelong service of Arnold Raymond Ray Lambeth, U.S. Army medic and all-around American hero, is recognized and remembered by all citizens of the state and nation. A witness whereof the undersigned certifies that the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on the third day of June 2021, submitted by Representative James L. Bowles, Jr., James White, House Principal Clerk.